When Falcon saw the buckboard with General Garrison and his daughter arrive at the site where the bridge was being built, he walked over to him.
Hello, General. Kathleen, are you out here to check on the progress?
I wish that was the only reason.
What is it? What happened?
Marshal Calhoun has been killed.
Travis? Are you saying Travis Calhoun has been killed?
Yes.
Clinton's?
No, it wasn't them.
It was them. It was the same as them. It was their hired gun.
Their hired gun?
Jefferson Tyree. Ever heard of him?
Yeah, I know him. You tell me what happened.
Garrison told the story to Falcon, as it was told to him by Harold Denham.
Can a man really be that fast, Falcon? Everyone agrees that Travis already had his gun out and drawn, but Tyree just spun around and shot him.
Yeah, a man can be that fast. You say Tyree's working for the Clintons now?
That's what I've heard. And he was with them when this happened.
If the Clintons actually have hired Jefferson Tyree, then they're as guilty of Travis's murder as he is.
No!
What do you mean, no? Think about it, Kathleen. You know that it's true.
It might be true about the rest of the Clintons, but not about Billy. I know that he wouldn't have anything to do with something like this. You don't know Billy the way I do.
Are you sure that you know him that well?
Yes, I'm positive. What are you trying to say, Papa? Are you saying you think Billy is like his brothers or his father? Because I know that he is not.
He stays with them, doesn't he?
It's more complicated than that.
Kathleen, I think you should listen to your father. I know men like this. I've known them my entire life.
You too? But you met him on the train, and you saw how he was at the dance. You know he was different from the others.
He behaves differently, that's true. But the very thing that makes him a good man is his sense of honor. If that sense of honor is misplaced, it's also going to doom him.
What do you mean, misplaced?
I mean that when it comes right down to it, if Billy is forced into choosing between his family and outsiders, Billy's going to choose his family.
No, never.
He'll have no choice. It'll be an act of honor. Twisted honor, to be sure. But its hold on him won't let him go.
Falcon attended the church part of Travis Calhoun's funeral. But as the funeral cortege moved slowly down Front Street toward the cemetery, Falcon saw Cletus and Ray Clinton entering the hog waller. Jefferson Tyree was with them.
Corey, give my apologies to Troy.
What do you mean? You aren't going out to the cemetery?
I've got some business to attend to.
Well, now, if it ain't my old friend Falcon McAllister. My, my, look at you. All dressed up like that. You been to a wedding or something?
A funeral.
A funeral? Oh, yeah. You must be talking about the marshal. I'm just real sorry about that. All I saw was someone pointing a gun at me. Maybe if he had come in here and talked to me just right, I wouldn't have had to kill him. He was your friend, was he?
He was.
Well, I tell you what. Just to show you that there's no hard feelings, how about stepping up to the bar and joining me in a drink? Bartender, give Mr. McAllister anything he wants to drink. On me, of course.
I didn't come here to drink with you, Tyree. I came here to kill you.
Hold on there, McAllister. You can't just come in here.
Shut up, Clinton.
You can't talk to me that way.
Shut up, Cletus. This is between McAllister and Tyree.
So, you're gonna kill me, are you, McAllister?
Yeah.
Show me.
Dropping his gun, Tyree slapped his hand over his wound. He looked down in surprise as blood squirted through his fingers, turning his shirt bright red. He took two staggering steps forward, then fell to his knees. He looked up at Falcon.
The son of a bitch. You're fast.
No, you're just too slow.
Cletus held his hand out in front of him.
Now, I ain't gonna draw on you, McAllister. If you kill me, everyone in here will be able to testify that you killed me in cold blood.
You go home, Cletus, both of you. Tell your pa he has 30 days to sell his ranch and move out.
What?
You heard me. You have 30 days to sell your ranch and move out of the state.
You can't order us out of the state.
I just did.
And if we don't?
Falcon didn't say a word, but he smiled. It was the same easy smile Cletus had just seen on Falcon's face before Tyree fell. The impact wasn't lost on either of the Clintons. The Vermilion was decorated with black bunting around the windows and a black wreath on the door. It had been closed since Travis was killed. It was just reopened for the first time tonight. Rachel had accepted Falcon's invitation to dinner, and the two of them were sitting at a table at the back of the restaurant. Rachel ordered baked chicken, green beans with mushrooms, and a salad. The waiter had simply nodded and headed to the kitchen with her order. He didn't ask Falcon what he wanted.
Aren't you going to order?
I don't need to. He knows what I want.
And what would that be?
Steak and baked potato.
You have the same thing every time?
Yeah.
Why?
I like it. You going back east?
Yes.
Edwin?
He wants me to join him for a series of performances.
You should go back. You're wasting your talent by playing piano in a saloon. Even a saloon as nice as a Golden Nugget.
That isn't the only reason I'm going back.
Oh?
May I be frank with you, Falcon?
By all means.
I have had romantic illusions about you even before I met you, based in part on the way your brother and sister speak of you. Then, when I met you, I thought you were everything they said and more, but...
It's the more, isn't it?
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. It's the more. Falcon, you are just too violent for me. No, wait, that isn't fair. It's this accursed West that is too violent for me. I had never known anyone who had been killed before. Since coming here, I have seen nothing but killing. And you are right in the middle of it.
I didn't choose the life I live, Rachel, but I make no apologies for it. I've killed, yeah, but I no longer kill anyone who doesn't need killing.
You no longer kill anyone who doesn't need killing? What an odd thing to say.
During the war, I killed men for no reason other than the fact that they were wearing a uniform different from my own. They were good men, with families that loved them. If I can kill such men during the time of war, do you think I would hesitate for 1 minute to kill someone like Tyree right now?
I suppose there is some logic there, somewhere. But for the life of me, I can't see it.
Mr. McAllister!
Kathleen, something wrong? Is the general all right?
There is something wrong. It's Billy.
Billy?
Billy's down at my house right now with my father. He asked me to come find you.
All right. Rachel, I'm sorry. Tell Troy to cancel my dinner. I have to...
There's no need to apologize. You go ahead and do what you have to do.
When Falcon stepped into the parlor of Garrison's house, he saw Garrison sitting in a chair and Billy standing next to the fireplace.
Billy, here's Mr. McAllister.
Mr. McAllister?
Hello, Billy. What's this about?
I came to warn you.
Oh?
Tomorrow, Pa, my brothers, and just about every rider we have will be coming into town. There will be at least 20 men, maybe more, and they're all coming after you, Mr. McAllister. Pa has promised $100 to everyone who comes with him.
I see. And why are you telling me this?
Because I don't want to see anyone else get killed. Mr. True was a good man. I remember going fishing with him once. And Travis Calhoun always treated me well when I came into the cafe. Mr. McAllister, if you would leave town, there wouldn't be anything happening tomorrow.
And you think my leaving town would end it?
Yes, sir, I do. I truly do.
Would your pa drop his fight against the general building his railroad? Because if your pa'd do that, I would leave. I didn't think he would.
Mr. McAllister, if Pa brings an army in here tomorrow, and he will, people are going to get killed. A lot of people.
Maybe even who, Billy? Kathleen? General, it's up to you. Do I leave or stay?
Whether you leave or stay, I intend to see this railroad built. And if that means an all-out war with Ike Clinton, then so be it.
I thought you might feel that way. I'm staying.
Well, I tried. I didn't think I could talk you into leaving, but I figured I had to try.
Billy, does your pa know you came here tonight?
No, sir. He'd probably kill me if he knew.
Isn't he going to wonder where you are?
I don't know. Maybe.
Don't go back.
I have to.
Son, I'm going to ask you something. Do you love my daughter?
Yes, sir, I do. I reckon I love her more than anything in the world.
And you, Kathleen, how do you feel about this boy?
I love him, Papa. You know that I love him.
I never thought I'd hear myself say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Billy, if you will take my daughter away from here, go someplace where neither your father nor your brothers can find you, I'll give you $1,000. That should be enough for you and Kathleen to get married and start a life together somewhere. Then, when all this is over, maybe you could come back.
Oh, Papa, thank you. Billy, what do you think?
I can't.
What? Billy, didn't you hear what Papa said? He's given us his approval. We can go away somewhere and get married.
I can't. I need to go.
Billy, no! Billy!
No, darling. Let him go.
You knew, didn't you, Mr. McAllister? You told me about his honor. You knew.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
When the eastern sky was laced by the first streaks of dawn, the town of Higbee was prepared for a siege. A barricade of wagons and barrels blocked the east end of Front Street, behind which stood at least 24 armed men. There were also men on the roofs of a leather goods store and Moore's General Store. Every woman and child, plus the men who didn't want to take part in the coming battle, had taken refuge in the church. The church was at the north end of town, set far enough off Front Street that it would be unlikely to catch any stray rounds. General Garrison was in command of the men of the town, and he had strapped on his sword and put on his service hat.
Where is Falcon?
Yeah, where is McAllister?
Falcon should be here.
Don't you folks be worrying about Falcon McAllister. All you have to worry about is keeping your head down and making every shot count when Clinton and his men get here.
In coordination with Garrison, Falcon was on a reconnoitering mission, having left town before dawn. He was actually on the Clinton Ranch now, very close to the main house, and he lay flat on his stomach, looking through his binoculars at the activity below. Billy had said there might be as many as 20 riders come into town with him. Falcon was surprised to see that there were at least twice that many.
Pa, this doesn't have to happen. If we do this, a lot of innocent people could get killed.
Boy, you are either with us or against us. Now, I put up with about as much pussyfooting from you as I can stomach. Make up your mind and make it up now.
I'm coming with you.
Good boy. Lou?
Yeah, boss?
You take half the men and go through Elbow Pass. Go all the way around town and come in from the west. I'll take the rest with me and we'll come in from the east. That way we'll have the town squeezed in between us.
Let me take the other group, Paul.
No, Ray. I want you three boys with me.
Half an hour later, Falcon was sitting on top of a large round rock, waiting, watching, as Lou and his 20 riders approached Elbow Pass. The pass was so confined that they couldn't go through without squeezing into a single file. It was a place that no one with any tactical sense would go. But these weren't men with a sense of tactics. These were cowboys, fired up by the prospect of $100. Because of that, they were men who could be easily lured into a trap. Falcon stood up so he could clearly be seen against the skyline.
God damn! Look, there's McAllister!
What's he doing out here?
Who cares? Let's get him!
The riders galloped through the draw, bent on capturing and killing Falcon McAllister. A couple of the men in front thought Falcon made an easy target, and they shot up toward him as they rode. None of them even came close enough to cause him to duck. Falcon leaned over almost casually to light two fuses. A little starburst of spark started at each fuse, then ran along the length of fuse for several feet along the draw. The first explosion went off about 50 yards in front of the lead rider. It filled the draw with smoke and dust, then brought a ton of rocks crashing down to close the draw so that the riders couldn't get through. The second explosion, somewhat less powerful, was located behind the riders. It too brought rocks crashing down into the draw behind him, closing the passage off. All 20 men were now bottled up inside the pass, and it was going to take them at least a day, maybe 2 days, to dig their way out. Leaving the trapped cowboys behind him, Falcon leaped onto his horse. Falcon came galloping into Higbee from the west end of town a few minutes later. He saw everyone in position behind the barricade, and he knew that he'd arrive before Clinton and his men got there.
Here's McAllister!
How did it go, Falcon?
I've got about 20 of them trapped in Elbow Pass. Another 20 will be coming from this direction. Is everybody ready?
We're ready.
Where's the breach?
Right there, that stack of barrels.
You sure it's wide enough?
Major, you may have come up with a plan, but I think I have the military experience to implement it.
I never question you, General.
They're coming!
All right, men, get ready. Mr. Denham, what are you doing in the front line? I said I wanted only young men.
I can get out in time.
Get back to the Golden Nugget before I shoot you myself.
All right, all right. But don't think for a minute. I'm not going to write an article about overbearing generals.
General, you're no spring chicken. You need to get back there, too.
Since when does a major give a general orders?
Since today. Now go.
Yes, sir. Good luck, Falcon.
Falcon watched as General Garrison and Denham disappeared. Then he stepped up to the barricade with his pistol in hand.
You boys ready? Bring them on.
Tom, Larry, and Frank, three young men who had ridden as guards for the Thompson shipment of Garrison's depot material, were among the five who were waiting behind the barricades with Falcon. Ike Clinton spotted the barricade that stretched across the street in front of him.
Hold it up, men! Hold it up!
Should we dismount?
Yes, goddammit, dismount and take cover on the side of the road.
You heard, Pa. Dismount! Dismount!
Suddenly, part of the barricade collapsed. And when it did, the shooting from the barricade stopped.
Son of a bitch! Their barricade came down! Not up, men! Not up and charge! By God, we've got them now!
Now, fall back!
Five men with Falcon dashed down Front Street as fast as they could run. All five were faster than Falcon, who was considerably older than they were. And even before he got there, more wagons were being pulled into the street from alongside the buildings to form a second barricade. Falcon got there just in time to get behind the second barricade. Behind him, Ike and his men pounded through the breach in the first barricade. No sooner had they passed through than another wagon was brought out behind him, resealing the breach. Dozens of the townsmen who had been waiting behind the buildings rushed out to man the second barricade. Billy saw it first and realized before anyone else that they had ridden into a trap. All 20 men were caught within a 50-yard pin with armed men behind barricades at each end.
Oh, we're trapped! Shoot! Shoot the bastards!
The men who had ridden in with the Clintons, suddenly realizing the hopelessness of their position, dismounted, threw their guns down, and started running to either side of the street with their hands up. Only the Clintons remained.
Don't shoot! Don't shoot! We surrender!
You cowardly bastards!
Cletus aimed at the running figure of Lou Reeder.
Ah! Now, boys! Ah! Bastards!
Cletus, Ray, and Ike all went down in the hail of gunfire. Billy was alone.
No! No! Why?
Billy wildly unloaded his pistol.
Billy, give it up! It's over!
Billy dismounted from his horse and threw aside his empty pistol. He picked up guns from both Cletus and Ray, and with a gun in each hand, turned toward the barricade again.
Billy, no! It's over!
Kathleen darted through the barricade, rushing towards Billy.
Kathleen!
Billy, through mad eyes, suddenly saw a hole appear in Kathleen's forehead.
Kathleen! No!
Falcon came out from behind the barricade then and started toward Billy, who was now standing there, holding both guns down by his side, staring at Kathleen's body.
Drop your guns, Billy!
Billy looked up at Falcon. The expression on Billy's face was that of a wild man. He raised both guns. A bullet shot through Falcon's left arm. He had no choice. Wriggling forward on his stomach, Billy worked his way through the dirt of the street to Kathleen's body. Reaching out, he took her hand in his.
Kathleen.
An hour later, with the street cleaned up, and with the bodies of the Clintons and Kathleen down at the Undertaker's, the morning stage left for La Junta. Falcon saw it go by, saw Rachel looking through the window as it left. She didn't wave, neither did Falcon.
Epitaph for Higby. This is the final issue of the Higby Journal. Should some future historian happen upon this journal, it might be of interest to know that only 25 copies of this issue will be printed. Only 25 issues. But this will be enough for every man, woman, and child remaining in Higby. 3 months ago, Higby was a vibrant community, with the prospects of a railroad to be built by General Wade Garrison. That railroad, the Colorado, New Mexico, and Texas, would have connected our city to the rest of the country. Indeed, to the rest of the world. We had wonderful business enterprises. Moore's General Store was as fine a store as one could find this side of Denver. But Moore's is gone. Our apothecary, leather goods store, hardware store, mortuary, all wonderful establishments of commerce are gone too. The Golden Nugget, where once we could gather in a convivial atmosphere and be entertained by the beautiful music of one of our nation's greatest musicians, is also gone, as is the Morning Star Hotel. Even the church closed its doors when the parson, Reverend E.D. Owen, found that he no longer had a flock to tend. This all came about by the greed and machinations of one man, Ike Clinton. In this one man's twisted mind, the railroad, which would have guaranteed growth and prosperity for Higby, was a threat, and he set about to stop it. If a final score is somewhere being kept, let it be known that Ike Clinton succeeded in stopping the railroad, though not in the way he intended. Clinton's greed cost him his own life, as well as the life of his 3 sons. But it also brought about the demise of Kathleen Garrison, a beautiful, innocent young lady who provided meaning to her father's life. When Kathleen Garrison was killed, the spark which sustained General Wade Garrison was extinguished. General Garrison stopped the building of the railroad. He left town a broken man, and at last report, was living the life of a recluse in a home for the mentally disturbed in Memphis, Tennessee. Without the hope of a railroad, that which was sustaining the growth and vibrancy of Higby, the town withered and died. And now, as I set the type that will reproduce these words, I can only hope that at least one of these journals will survive until some future time. To you, dear reader in the future, I leave these final words. Our town, which will be but a faded shadow in your history, was once bright with hope and promise. And long after the last building has turned to dust, the spirits of such men as Falcon McAllister, Norman True, Carl Moore, Titus, Travis, and Troy Calhoun, General Wade Garrison, Corey, and Prentice Hampton, and such women as Kathleen Garrison, Rachel Kirby, and even our local Madam Maggie, will occupy this place until the entire planet returns to dust. I am Harold Denham, editor and publisher of the Higby Journal. I bid thee all a final farewell.
Thunder of Eagles is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2008, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. With performances by Mort Shelby, David Coyne, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Ken Jackson, Colleen Delaney, Christopher Graybill, Tim Carlin, Peter Stray, James Konacek, Lily Beacon, Thomas Penny, Elizabeth Demery, Michael Glenn, James Lewis, Dylan Lynch, Johan Detweiler, Christopher Walker, Andy Clements, Elliot Dash, Eric Messner, and Michael John Casey. Additional Boot Hill Boys by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johan Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Matt Jacobs. Musical score composed and performed by Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed Thunder of Eagles, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com and be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, Blood Bond, and The Last Gunfighter series. Available from Graphic Audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for another Gear Grindin' episode of Mark Dalton, Owner Operator.
Graphic Audio presents Mark Dalton, Owner Operator. Book number 2. Reefer Madness and More Tales of the Open Road by Ido Van Belkin. Copyright 2008, Ido Van Belkin. Performed by David Coyne and the Graphic Audio Players. Episode number 4, Two for the Road.
The call came out of the blue. And the voice was all but a distant memory.
Hi, Mark. It's Jenny.
Jenny?
Mark couldn't believe it was her. They hadn't spoken in years, and here she was calling him up as if they'd talked every week. Unbelievable. Mark pulled Mother Lode onto the shoulder of the highway and parked it, just to be safe.
Yeah, it's me, Jenny. How's it going?
Mark looked down at the asphalt strip in front of him.
South. It's going south. What's up with you?
Well, I was thinking...
Yeah?
I was thinking that maybe we could try and, you know, get back together again.
Mark felt as if the world had been pulled out from under him. Back together again. To be honest, it had to be one of the furthest things from his mind these past few years. He'd been working as a private investigator, making a good living videotaping men who spent three-hour lunches with their secretaries, and women who spent more time with their personal trainers than they did in the gym. The money had been good, but the work had taken up a lot of his time, especially nights and weekends. That became obvious to him when he set up his camera one night outside a motel room on the Scarborough Strip and discovered that the woman he was taping having sex just happened to be having sex with his wife. His wife, Jenny. And now, here she was wanting to get back together again.
Gee, I don't know, Jenny. I'm driving my own truck now, and to be honest, I'm kind of enjoying being out on my own.
Oh, come on, Mark. You're not even going to give me a chance.
A chance? How about $1 million also, you useless...
Well, what's that, darling?
Oh, nothing. Kind of late for a second chance, isn't it?
Yes, it is late. But there's something... missing from my life, and I didn't know what it was for the longest time. And then it sort of hit me all at once.
What did?
You were the thing that was missing from my life.
She sounded convincing, but Mark still didn't believe it. She'd never even talked this way before, even when they'd been dating. The things she was saying now sounded, well, crazy coming from her.
You didn't seem to have any trouble finding other people to fill in for me whenever the mood struck you.
I was wrong to do what I did to you, and I'm sorry. You were a wonderful lover, the best I've ever had. And I didn't know what I had until it was gone.
That's nice to know.
If there's any way I could make it up to you, I'd be willing to do it.
Anything?
Anything.
Hey, it sounds really good, Jenny. And I'd really like to get back with you, but truth is, I don't want to give up what I'm doing right now.
Who says you have to give up driving?
What?
It didn't seem like her to say something like that. She was either a totally different person, or she was out to get something from him. He hoped it was the former.
I wouldn't ask you to give up driving for me, especially if it's something you enjoy.
I don't even want to settle down.
Well, of course not. If we got back together, I could even go out on the road with you.
You'd be willing to do that?
Of course, Mark. It would be a great way to spend some time with you, learn what you've been doing with your life. And our nights together would be pretty hot, don't you think?
You'd want to come on the road with me?
Yes. Couples do that all the time, don't they?
I don't know, Jenny. This is all so sudden. Maybe I should think about it.
Think about this. I'll make it worth your while.
Mark was reminded of a very different Jenny, lying next to him naked and damp with sweat and saying such sweet and sexy things in his ear. The decision was made. His head was telling him no, but his heart and his other head were saying, oh yeah.
Well, maybe we could give it a try.
Great. I could be packed and ready tomorrow if you like.
Packed?
Yeah. What time can you pick me up?
Afternoon, I guess.
Great. Just enough time for me to pick up something special just for you. Which do you prefer, white or black?
Black.
Okay. See you tomorrow.
Mark stared out at the highway in front of him, wondering what exactly had just happened. As best as he could figure, he'd either just started onto the road to greater happiness, or he just made one of the biggest mistakes in his life. Only time would tell. After delivering his load early in the morning, Mark called Bud around 10 a.m. and managed to get a truckload of bottled water headed for a grocery distributor in Winnipeg. Best of all, the delivery date was 3 days away, so he had enough breathing room to spend some time getting reacquainted with his ex-wife, Jenny. He hadn't meant to mention it to Bud, but somehow he'd let it slip about Jenny during their conversation.
Are you crazy?
It could work. There are plenty of husband and wife driving teams out there.
And you're never going to be part of one. Not with Jenny and not with any other woman either. You're a loner, Mark.
Oh, come on, Bud. The least you could do is give it a chance before you stomp all over it.
All right. But the next time you call, you have to let me say I told you so as much as I want.
Okay, sure.
Best of luck, Mark. You're gonna need it.
Mark picked her up in front of her apartment building at Annette and Runningmede in the southwest end of Toronto. Not exactly the best place in the world to be driving an 18-wheeler. Mark hoped Jenny was out in front of her building waiting for him since there was no way he'd be able to park his rig and knock on her door. Luckily, she was there waiting. He stopped out front and waved to her. She ran down to the curb with a backpack bobbing rhythmically on her back.
Hey, hop in.
Jenny tossed her backpack onto the seat.
Right after I get my suitcases.
Suitcases?
I've only got three of them. I wanted to be prepared.
For what, World War III?
Then she was gone, off to retrieve the rest of her baggage. When she came back out, she was struggling with three large pieces of luggage.
Oh, kill me.
Mark didn't want to help her, didn't want any of that stuff in his truck. But he'd agreed to take her along, so maybe it would be okay to indulge her this one time. He got out of the truck and carried her bags for her. 5 minutes later, Mark had her stuff packed away as best he could. There was still some room left, but the three pieces of luggage had definitely put a dent in their living space. Mark helped Jenny up into the cab.
there's not much room in here, is there?
Suits me just fine.
Jenny stared at him for a few seconds, then realization hit her like a brick.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is your home, isn't it?
She took a look around the cab as if she were being polite.
But it's fine. I guess it'll just take me a little getting used to.
Mark nodded, put the Peterbilt in gear, and let out the clutch.
So, where are we going?
Winnipeg.
Winnipeg? Why Winnipeg? Why not Florida or California? Couldn't we go there instead?
We could go to those places, but they want the stuff that's on my truck in Winnipeg.
All right, I guess.
Look at it this way. There's not a lot on the highway between here and there, so we'll have plenty of time to talk.
Jenny smiled but said nothing, probably doing her best to be a trooper. Mark headed south to the lake shore, then decided to head west for Highway 427. As he drove, Jenny dialed a few numbers on her cell phone, then listened as if she were picking up her messages. She finished picking up her messages, but didn't say a word to him. Instead, she stared out the window as if something were on her mind.
You're looking good, Jenny.
You too, Mark.
How have you been?
Good. You?
I've been good. You seeing anybody?
No.
Then, after a moment's thought, Jenny shook her head slowly.
Not at the moment, anyway. But why would I be seeing anybody if I'm here with you?
Right. You been working much?
I've been doing a bunch of odd jobs. You know, whatever it takes to make ends meet. You've been doing well, haven't you?
Yeah, I do all right. But I don't have much living expenses since I basically live out of this truck.
How much do you make a year?
What?
I mean, this truck is so well maintained and seems to run great. You must be doing real well for yourself.
Well, I've saved some money, but I'll probably be needing a new truck in a little while, and that'll take care of most of it.
Mark was about to continue when she put up a hand and pulled out her cell phone.
Expecting an important call?
Yeah, you could say that.
Mark didn't understand it. For someone looking forward and trying to make a new life for herself, she sure seemed anchored to her old one.
Any new messages?
Yeah, plenty.
The silence between them was drawn out for miles. Mark was looking forward to getting out of the truck for a while.
You hungry?
Yes, very.
There's a greasy spoon a few kilometers up the road. The burgers are pretty good, and their chili, well, it's good too, but not as good as the burgers.
Burgers? Hamburgers?
Yeah.
Well, that's not what I had in mind for dinner.
Well, what did you have in mind?
I don't know, Swiss Chalet at the very least, something like that.
The burgers are really good.
I can't eat anything that's too fattening.
It's still early. Let's see what's up ahead.
Okay.
That made her happy.
Thank God for small miracles.
Mark had seen husband and wife teams work really well together, seeming to know exactly what the other wanted even before they did. Or else they would compromise, knowing that if one gave in this time, it would be the other's turn the next time around. Obviously, this wasn't the way it was working with Jenny. As he guided his rig past dozens of greasy spoons and mom-and-pop joints, Mark gained a newfound respect for husband and wife teams. There had to be a trust and understanding between two equals for them to work, and it clearly wasn't working here. Mark wasn't sure if he could ever find a woman he could team up with. One thing was for certain, she'd have to be something pretty special even before he agreed to give it another try. It was almost dark by the time they reached Sudbury.
Well?
Maybe there's a Swiss Chalet in Sudbury?
I'm driving a tractor trailer. It's not exactly the best sort of vehicle to be cruising around the city in.
Please.
All right.
They ended up eating at a fancy steak restaurant in Sudbury, the bill coming in at just under $80. Jenny sipped a cup of after-dinner tea.
Which hotel do you usually stay at?
Hotel?
Where else would we be sleeping?
Back of my truck's usually good for me.
But I need a shower, and I need room to try on my nighties, or else I won't know which one I'm in the mood for. Some of my outfits are really hot.
Sure, a hotel room sounds great.
Mark smiled at the irony. He'd hoped it would be like this on the road with Jenny every night, but if this carried on, he'd have a smile on his face and not a penny to his name. The sex had been great. Jenny had been a disappointment in most aspects of their marriage, but he really had to hand it to her in the bedroom. She was everything a man could want and more. Then again, she had had a lot of practice. A lot of practice. Mark was feeling satisfied on this morning, and a little bit tired out too, but pleasantly so. The night had been great, but the trouble was he couldn't lounge around in bed all day reflecting on it. He had to get back onto the road to earn his living. Then night would come, and after 8 hours or so of driving, he'd be dead tired while she'd be all ready to go again. Another night like the last would be nice, but any more than that would probably kill him, or at least send him to an early grave. Sure, it was a great way to go, but it was already 9 o'clock.
Jenny, wake up!
Huh? What?
It's after 9.
Yeah, so?
We've got to get going.
But it's only 9.
Mark jumped out of bed and got changed. Jenny lingered in the bed, trying to sleep, and then grudgingly sliding out of the bed and heading to the bathroom without any clothes on.
What are you doing?
I'm going to take a shower.
But you had a shower last night.
I start every day with a shower.
Jenny closed the bathroom door behind her. Mark thought about taking off his clothes and joining her, but he'd already made a big deal about hitting the road. It would be hypocritical of him to suddenly want to take his time. Half an hour later, she was packed. They left the room.
What are we having for breakfast?
Just a coffee and donuts for me.
But the hotel has a really nice restaurant.
Mark decided it would take less time just to agree with her and get breakfast over with.
On the other hand, bacon and eggs is good too.
Jenny's slow start irritated Mark to the point where everything the woman did grated on Mark's nerves. The way she breathed, in and out, in and out. The way she sat there with 2 feet on the floorboard and an arm on the armrest, like she owns the place. And the way she looked out the window with her head turning left to right on her neck as if there were all sorts of interesting things to look at outside. For crying out loud, it was all so annoying.
Why are we doing this?
Doing what?
This. After all these years, we don't talk to each other, and one day you decide that you want to get back with me. Why?
Because I missed you, and I realized what I had lost, and because, well, I wanted to.
You know, it would be great if you could get your AZ license and we could share the driving duties. You could drive twice as far in half the time and make a lot more money.
The money part sounds good, but I really can't see myself driving a truck.
Then why did you agree to ride with me? I'm not on vacation, you know. I'm working. And if you're with me, you might as well be driving and making yourself useful.
Jenny cast him an innocent smile.
I guess I'm just having trouble making the adjustment to life on a truck. I did drop everything just so I could join you on this ride, so excuse me if I'm not exactly ready to give up all the usual creature comforts for the privilege of living out of a truck for the rest of my life. Last night was great.
Yes, it was.
I want to do it again.
Tough to make money at this job when you spend every night in a hotel.
Without saying a word, Jenny unbuttoned her blouse, ran a finger inside one of her bra cups, and flashed one of her breasts at Mark.
Are you sure I'm not worth it?
Mark was only human.
I think there's a hotel up the highway a bit with pretty reasonable rates.
Mark dropped Jenny off in front of the motel and then headed over to the nearby rest station to refuel his truck. After topping off his tanks, Mark realized that he'd given Jenny his credit card to rent the room. But instead of going back to the motel to chase down Jenny for his card, Mark went through Jenny's purse in search of one of her cards. The purse was on the passenger seat and her credit cards, several of them, were just inside. On the one hand, he didn't feel right using her card for his fuel. But on the other hand, why not? If they were together again, then they were also sharing expenses. If she wanted to sleep in a motel room each night, then the least she could do was spring for fuel every once in a while. Mark stepped up to the clerk and handed over Jenny's card. The clerk seemed to have trouble getting the card to work. Then he made a phone call and spent a couple of minutes listening very carefully to someone on the other end. The clerk finally returned to the counter.
Is there a problem? Do I have another card?
Why?
Without another word, the clerk presented Jenny's card to Mark. then cut it in two with a huge pair of heavy-duty scissors.
What the hell did you do that for?
Do you have another card, sir? Or shall I call the police?
Mark picked up the pieces of Jenny's card and stacked them one on top of the other.
Do you have another card?
No. But I have some cash in my truck.
Mark slipped the pieces of credit card into his pocket and headed back to Motherlode. He kept a few $100 in cash on hand for just such emergencies. As he sat in the truck, counting out bills, Mark noticed Jenny's cell phone sticking out of her open purse. After putting away the cash he didn't need, Mark picked up her phone and dialed her number. When the answering machine kicked in, he punched in the code that accessed her messages.
You have 10 new messages.
You sleep with my husband again! Hell, if you even so much as talk to him again, I'll make you wish you'd never met the son of a bitch!
I found this phone number in my husband's pants. He says it's the number for his accountant. Is that true?
This is CFR Collections. Our records show you're 3 months overdue on your last payment. If you want your card activated, you must make a payment within 3 days or...
This is TD Visa calling. I'm looking for Jenny Dalton. Your account has been suspended with us.
Hello, Jenny McDonald. This is Bud McFallon calling from Suncrest Bank.
And on it went. Message after message of credit companies and disgruntled women wanting either money or their husbands. Mark exited the truck and paid for the fuel, the seed of a plan already germinating in the back of his mind. Mark knocked on the door of the motel room about a half hour later. Jenny opened the door, dressed in a barely there nightgown that did little to cover up her admittedly gorgeous body.
What took you so long?
I needed a lot of gas.
You got a full tank, huh?
Yeah.
And then you can go all night.
Mark slept like a baby until 6. Then he rolled out of bed, quietly packed up his things, and left the room. Mark considered leaving her there, outside of Winnipeg, with nothing more than her credit cards and her luggage, and letting her find her own way home. He also thought about leaving her there stranded, and contacting the woman on the answering machine, the one that wanted Jenny dead, and letting the woman know where to find her. In the end, however, he didn't have the heart to do any of those things to her. He had something better in mind. So he paid for the hotel room, which was the least he could do, and brought all of her luggage in from the truck and left it with the clerk at the front desk. When he was sure Jenny and her belongings were safe, he hopped into Mother Lode and headed west toward Winnipeg. The load didn't have to be at the warehouse until late in the afternoon, so Mark had all the time he needed to find just what he was looking for. Just outside Winnipeg, Mark found a greasy spoon that suited his purposes. It was the kind of place truckers loved, with good food, smiling waitresses, and an informality that suited people who had been on the road for days. It was also full of people having breakfasts that suggested news about the dangers of cholesterol hadn't made it this far up the nation's highways. Plates were brimming with bacon, sausages, eggs, and even more bacon and sausages. This was exactly the sort of place Mark would find the driver he needed to carry out his plan.
Excellent.
And there he was, sitting at a table in the corner, alone, a morning paper in his left hand and a fork full of sausage in his right. Mark made his way over to the man and saw he was wearing a pair of tar-stained jeans. Perfect. His red t-shirt was stretched out across his gut, unable to cover the distance to the top of his pants, and leaving his big fleshy grin between two pieces of clothing. The button on the jeans seemed at a bursting point, and the pants themselves were held in place by a pair of baby blue suspenders. The front of the t-shirt was spotted with fresh grease stains and a couple of splotches of something that might have been last night's pizza.
Mind if I sit down?
The man looked around, obviously wondering why Mark had chosen to sit at his table when there were still plenty of others that were empty.
Yeah, if you won't.
Now sitting across from the man, Mark realized he'd also had a bowl of chili waiting its turn to be eaten. Mark had learned years ago that chili was a food that was best avoided when on the road in the confines of a truck cab, especially if you were riding with someone else. Mark just looked at the steaming bowl of chili and smiled.
I'm Mark Dalton.
Name's Mick. But the truck, but with an eye.
Well, Mick, I've got a little proposition for you.
Hey, I'm not that kind of guy.
Oh, no, nothing like that, Mick. In fact, it's a money deal. Just about opposite to what you're thinking.
Oh, yeah? How much is in it for me?
100?
200.
It was more than he wanted to pay, but it would probably be worth every penny. Maybe even a bargain by the time all was said and done.
Deal.
Jenny stood at the front desk, her head swiveling around on her neck in search of Mark.
The room is already paid for, ma'am.
Great.
But there is a room service charge and a charge for 4 phone calls this morning, totaling $57.33.
You said the room is paid.
Well, the room is, yes.
Where's my husband?
The clerk's face was a mask of confusion, and then it suddenly brightened with realization.
Ah, he left you this.
The clerk handed Jenny a letter.
Dear Jenny, learned a bit more about you than you wanted last night. Bad credit and some crazy lady wants to kill you. That sounds like something that might happen to me. Anyway, look to your right. See the big man there standing like a fish out of water? He has money to pay for the rest of your bill, and I've paid him to give you a ride back to Toronto.
Jenny looked around and spotted the big dirty man standing by the front door. He waved back at her.
If you refuse to ride with him, he'll gladly take my money and drive to Toronto without you. I suggest you ride with him. He could use the company, and the road he'll be taking back to the city is straight and narrow. And that's the kind of road I think you really need to be on, before we ever think about getting back together again. All the best, Mark.
Oh, no!
Hey, baby. You ready to go?
If you enjoyed this Mark Dalton adventure, be sure to check out next month's episode featured on the following action-packed titles. Deathlands number 81, Desert Kings. First Mountain Man number 10, Preacher's Justice. And Doomsday Warrior number 14, American Death Orbit.
Can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for? Just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.